I'm here. Send me. Did you mean it? So, you know, if those words come pouring out of your mouth at the slightest call from God, I think that you probably want to make sure that the next thing that comes out of your mouth is the same words that Gabriel said when he visited Mary and surprised her and says, "The Lord is with you. It's okay." The Lord is with you. You always want to make sure that that also is there. Because we all do need that reminder, don't we? The Lord is with you. The Lord is with me. The Lord is with each of us all the time. And this house of God, the psalmist calls it thy house, O Lord. All of creation is called God's house, God's home. And it's our home too, isn't it? This is our home. This is where we live and breathe and do all that we do is in God's home, this home of the universe. And it's a source of wonder. It's a source of awe. It can be a source of intoxication even. What artists and scientists know is that even if we're intoxicated with the stuff of life, with this world that we live in, it still takes a little discipline if you really want to manifest anything, if you really want to create anything in the world. It takes a certain discipline to do so. And so I want to kind of extrapolate onto that sense of the discipline and say, I want to talk about what I'll call rules for living in the universe. Rules that name the responsibility that we need to take for living in this sacred home, which is God's creation, which is also, is our sacred creative vocation, living in this world, sharing our gifts with the world, in tune with the ways of the universe, with the ways of God. We're looking at creation spirituality as a movement within Christian history, more and more now, and the movement that is taking place with our Christian faith in conversation, especially with the science that we're finding out about life, about the nature of the universe. It's no longer just, you know, when the Bible was written and for many centuries, they literally thought it was that dome, flat surface, and this dome of the sky. And that was all that existed. But we know that's a little bit bigger than that now, yes? Yes? I'm not alone on that, right? Okay, good. And so as we look at creation spirituality, it's the sense that the spirituality involves all of creation, all of God's world. And creation spirituality names 13 of these rules for living in the universe, concert in harmony with God's way. And I can only touch on a few of those this morning, and I'm not going to go through all 13, but I want to give a feel for how we humans are called to live in relatedness with God's creation. And I'll just name them so you have a sense of it, but those rules are extravagance, interconnectivity, expansion, variety, creativity, emptiness, justice, beauty, community, sacrifice, suffering, and resurrection, paradox and humor. There's paradox, lots of paradox in the universe. Humor and work. We do something. We are engaged. It's just as the molecules and atoms are engaged. They're all working. They're doing their stuff all the time. And so I want to start with one of the rules I want to look at, one of the central rules. Actually, it's interesting. I notice that it's right in the middle of the 13 that they list and that they work with in all the things I've read. And here's the seventh one in the middle, six on either side, and that's justice. Justice is a central rule for living in the universe. Justice is the quest for balance. Maybe that's why it's in the center. The quest for balance, for symmetry, for equilibrium. For homeostasis, it's integral to the makeup of the universe. It's integral to God's ways of creating us, creating the entire cosmos. And it's no wonder that many of the major thinkers, Christian thinkers throughout time, have taught that justice is the most important of the virtues, of human virtues, of living, justice. And then with that goes the fact that injustice is a rupture. It's a rupture in the universe. It's an affront to the cosmic wholeness. Yeah? Injustice, it's an invitation to chaos. It's an unraveling of the ropes which hold the universe together. And as such, it's by justice then that we bring together the broken parts, the neglected, the cut off, the impoverished parts of the universe to render them again whole. Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous line reflects this understanding. He said, the moral arc of the universe may be long, but it bends toward justice. Another rule for living in the universe is extravagance. I like that one. Extravagance. Annie Dillard, the author, she wrote about this rule, and she says, if the landscape reveals one certainty, it is that the extravagant gesture is the very stuff of creation. Reminds me, as I was thinking of this extravagance, a number of years ago, my wife and I lived in Albuquerque, and the church we went to had a class on abundant living. And one of the assignments one week was to bring a symbol, something that symbolized abundance for each of the people. And at that time of year in Albuquerque, one of the trees that were all over the city, they put off their leaves, and they had these little filaments on them so that they would fly all over the place. And then literally, there were millions. They're literally millions. They were all the street and the gutters on people's lawns in their backyard. They'd get in on your porch. They'd come in through the windows. It was amazing. And most people just kind of thought of them as a total pain in the you-know-what. It was like they were everywhere. And so I brought a bag full. I picked up, I just scoped up a bag full and brought them in as my symbol of abundance, because it was just total abundance. But the funny thing was that one of the women in the class, she just wouldn't touch them. She goes, no, I'm not touching those. Those are the worst things in the world. Those are terrible. I hate those things. I won't take any more of those. But it was funny, because somebody brought, a cup of sand, the abundance. It was just especially in the high plains and the desert. Sand is everywhere. And again, but the nature is so abundant. So abundant, extravagantly abundant. It's like the sun. I found out that the sun, that's our source of life and warmth, right? The earth receives 1/1,000,000,000th of the sun's energy. If we're this little dot out there, right? 360 degrees all the way, we get 1/1,000,000,000th of the sun's energy. That's a lot of energy. So extravagant, and that's just one star. So the nature, the universe is extravagant. But are we? Are we extravagant? Some of the major thinkers in the early church, they taught that when people have the necessities for living, and more than that, then they have an obligation to give the rest, the extra that they have, to those who lack the necessities. And here's the interesting and challenging part. They also thought that if they don't give away the extra that we have, then those in dire need have the right to take what is necessary for their survival. In fact, Thomas Aquinas, he wrote that taking, that act, is not, strictly speaking, theft. In fact, in the early first, centuries 3, 4, 5, and 6 especially, they actually talked about the theft was those who had extra. That was the theft, and that they needed for survival. It's come a long way. That's what the early church taught. But it's this sense of extravagance. And it's also, extravagance is translated into ethics when humans are challenged, to be open-hearted, to be big-hearted, open-handed, large-souled. Question for us is, do we, with souls as large as the universe, spend all that we have the way that the universe does? Or do we hoard our souls themselves and die unspent, untapped, and disengaged? It reminds me, I don't recall who said it or where I read it, but I find it very inspiring and very challenging at the same time. But an elderly person, when asked if they wouldn't rather just kind of relax and kick back and enjoy their last few years, responded, "Absolutely not. I want to go to my grave with nothing left. being completely spent, having used up all my energy and spread my love and gifts as far and wide as possible. I love that. And I want to turn and run the other way at the same time. I mean, that's a challenge for me. And at the same time, yes, yes. I experience that as a call from God. Another rule for living in the universe is that of expansion. One writer wrote that the greatest discovery of the 20th century was the expanding universe. But while the universe is expanding, again, the question is, are we? Are we expanding? Because where there is fear, contraction takes over. Matthew Fox reminds us, fear denotes avoidance in general. To allow fear to take over our ways of living or our hearts or our institutions is to void a cosmic law, the need to expand through love and courage. Amen. If we look around our society now, the fundamentalism that we see that rules so much of religious consciousness today, I think it represents a failure to love. It represents a failure to enlarge the size of our hearts. And so, too, I think, do all the expressions of racism or sexism or classism or sectarianism or nationalism. These are examples, I think, of the human species settling for contraction when the universe is urging us to expand. Persons and institutions stuck in fear, they oppose the universe. They oppose the universe as they attempt to build bigger moats or thicker or higher walls of defense or develop more orthodox litmus tests. It takes a lot of energy to fight the universe, to fight God. Energy that could be used in so many more productive ways. To celebrate and to enter into expansion, that's not to deny that contraction doesn't take place in the universe. I mean, limits are important. I mean, an artist, you know, they have their frame and they stay within that frame. Or a music score, it has, you know, the certain notes that it does are our lungs. Thank God there's limits. If we only expanded, we'd literally, what, blow up? I mean, we'd explode. So, you know, where am I? I'm lost. But the general message, I exploded there. The general message of the universe is when in doubt, expand. When in doubt, expand. You know, as Jesus and others taught, love has no limits. Love is one of those things that never explodes, as it were. I mean, it can never reach its end point. It always gets bigger. It always gets more and more. You can't ever give it all away. And in fact, in the case of Jesus, it's like love expands to the breaking point and then beyond it. In other words, it goes to crucifixion, but then it goes on to resurrection. No, for the breaking point, the end point that Jesus experienced in his crucifixion wasn't the end of the story. The belief in resurrection carries us beyond intimidation, which is what fear and contraction preach. The resurrection carries us to the world of divine surprises. That, like the universe itself, are beyond our wildest imaginations. As I mentioned last week, everyone is endowed with creativity, another rule for living in the universe. We can say that creativity is the humans giving birth, as the whole cosmos does, as God does. Creativity is our godly power at work in the universe. So take a moment, think about it for yourselves. Name something that you do that births good things in the world. It doesn't have to be big. I mean, I'm doing something like that right now, right? It doesn't have to be big. Turn to the person next to you. What is something that you do that helps birth something good in the world? Seriously, think of, maybe just share with your neighbor something that you do to help birth something good in the world. It doesn't have to be big or overwhelming, but something. Yeah. And the longer I let you go, the more you'd come up with. It's true, yeah? It's true, we all do. We all participate in that. And then also as we think about it and just be thinking about this, but in what ways do we as a church participate in this creative birthing with God? Huh? Yeah. We as a church also participate in this birthing, this creative birthing with God. Well, one other is that a rule is interconnectivity, this connection. And interconnectivity is now understood as a basic law of the universe. In fact, I read that sometimes scientists talk about interconnectivity as a habit. I love that. A habit of the universe is to be connected. Relationship is the very nature of the universe. And so that, but as a rule for living, how does this translate into a moral law for humans? Well, Thomas Merton provides a great answer. He wrote that the whole idea of compassion is based on a keen awareness of the interdependence of all these living things, which are all part of one another and all involved in one another. Compassion is the moral law of interconnectivity. It's the cosmic law of responding to one another's pain and suffering, as well as to one another's joy and celebration. And it's in all of these ways of wisdom, in all of these ways of wisdom, the ones I mentioned and the others, that there lies authentic empowerment, ways to serve the universe, which is to say, ways to serve humanity and God. And they're productive because they are of the way of God. They are in harmony with the ways of the universe, not fighting it. This is how it's designed, how it's put together. Then I heard the Lord's voice saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am." Send me, right? Here I am. Send me. Made in the image of the Creator, every one of us carries within us the capacity to be a mystic, a pursuer of the mystery. That's what a mystic. Someone who pursues the mystery, the wonder of life. To be creative, to be visionary, to be an agent for social change, for positive change. It's our responsibility to say, "Here I am, send me," and to cultivate our capacity to benefit the earth and all of its creatures. That's our sacred vocation. What are you doing to creating, and what are you creating in this world that will cause positive ripples into the future?